From the Lean Enterprise Institute in Boston, this is the WLEI podcast, where we share stories of people making the world better through lean thinking and practice. For more information about LEI, including how we can help you apply lean thinking, please visit lean.org.
Welcome to the WLEI podcast. I'm your host, Matt Savas. Today, we're talking to Jay Multanen and Jared Ragazine from Best Bath, a manufacturer of showers and bathtubs for commercial and residential buildings. Jay is the co-CEO, who runs it alongside his sister, having taken the reins from their father, and Jared is the director of Lean and Continuous Improvement. Over the course of the discussion, Jay and Jared explain how they've made lean thinking fundamental to Best Bath's culture through methodical changes to their organizational structure and people development strategies. They also share how lean has afforded them a significant competitive advantage and strengthened their relationship with their construction trade partners. They also touch on Best Bath's unique profit share model that's been instrumental to enabling the right behaviors from the C-suite to the shop floor. Jay and Jared will be leading a learning session at LEI's Lean Summit in March 2024. If you register by October 31st, you can save up to $900 on your registration. Head over to lean.org/summit to learn more. Hi, Jared. Hi, Jay. Welcome to the WLEI podcast. Thanks for joining me here. Really appreciate you taking some time today.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Matt.
We'll just give some basic background for our listeners to kick things off. You guys come from a company called Best Bath. You manufacture showers, tubs for single family homes and large commercial and residential buildings. But can you walk us through a little bit more about what the company does and also who you are?
Sure. Well, Best Bath has been in existence since 1969, when my father founded the company. We specialize in manufacturing bathing solutions. Over the last 25 years, we've focused on accessibility in bathing and really pioneered safety through universal design. We particularly sell direct to building owners, mechanical contractors, plumbing and contractors, and installers. We also have a division where we sell through or sell to home remodel renovation projects and small ma-and-pa renovation shops. Gosh, I started working at the company when I wasn't on tour. I had a place on the factory floor where I could chop fiberglass, and just really earned a sense of pride seeing the improvements that we were making, not just in the products, but primarily the people. I mean, I'm not passionate about bathing, but I am passionate about community. Since then, we've built and fostered a lean culture, which I think has really helped us not only transform our product, but transform ourselves and really provide some value to the greater community and particularly the construction industry.
And Jared, what's your background? What's your role at Best Bath?
Sure. So I'm the director of Lean and Continuous Improvement. And also corporate learning. I've been here for a couple of years now. And, you know, as Jay mentioned, the history of the company goes back over 50 years. Our lean journey is over 20 years. And this is a newer role for the organization. Lean has been present, and there have been individuals overseeing that effort. But with me coming on, there was a kind of a shift in the corporate structure where a director position was created. And it's just been a wonderful experience to fill that role and to work with all departments in the organization. There's really two chief objectives that I was given by our company president, who reports to Jay, and we have two co-CEOs that our company president reports to. And those three really formed two major objectives. One of them is Lean Enterprise, we've had a lot of the gains in operations over the years. I think that's common for many, many companies who are on the lean journey. There are ways to apply it in the office space and in the administrative aspects of the organization. And that was known, but just wanted some assistance on having a wall-to-wall true culture approach to lean. And so the last 2 years, been doing that. The second objective was developing critical thinking, that problem-solving capability for folks, to extend it for those who are already thinking and acting in that way. And for those who may not have been exposed to some of those tools or ideas, to invite them into that space. And so my role as the director of Lean has been to those two ends. Everything that we're doing, I think we've been able to go from good to better to best, you know, a continuous improvement of this idea from a great company and now striving to make us even greater.
I would also be remiss if I didn't mention my counterpart as co-CEO, my sister Megan, and there's no way I could do what I do without her.
Yeah, I'd like to dig into that corporate structure you mentioned there, Jared. So, you know, that's a significant change when you transform how an organization is built. And I'm curious, you know, what led to you guys making that decision where you decided that, yes, lean would be an integral part of how we operate and how far it reaches inside of the organization? Maybe I'll start with Jay. What was your thinking behind that?
Yeah. Well, I think everybody in the lean community would realize that we don't get any real momentum in continuous improvement or lean focus without it permeating through the entire organization. And our president of the organization, Tammy Harris, she began to really see the benefits of the lean focus, and especially as I kind of stepped more out of the operation and into a more executive role of guiding the organization, we all noticed a real need, and it was critical to get buy-in from the very tippy top of the organization, throughout the organization, to say, gosh, this is so important to how we go to market, to who we are, to what value we create. And especially as we started using some models that we stole from LEI, you know, to help us with our strategic planning. I think that really helped the sea change.
Are you talking about Hoshin Kanri there, or what was the, it's not sealing, by the way. We do intentionally give these away.
Yes. And we do use some, Hoshin concepts, and Jared would probably love to talk to you more about them, but you know, I love the lean transformation model. Okay. And I love it I can use it to, it's scalable. I can use it to solve a problem in a division or a work cell, or I can use it to solve, you know, where are we going as an organization? What value do we create? And we were able to define the five different values that we created and go from there. We call it the best path advantage.
Very cool. Yeah, it's a fractal model, we say, because it can be used at the micro, even work level, or like you said, at the enterprise level, defining what value the organization creates. Very cool to hear that. And I'd like to hear from Jared on this, maybe even specifically, you know, as the director of Lean, you know, you mentioned that you moved people development from HR to Lean. I'm curious to understand what that means. I suspect it was instrumental in part of this organizational restructuring and trying to, as Jay just mentioned, get Lean to permeate the entire organization. Can you speak to that a bit, Jared?
Of course. So there was a lot of thought that went into that. That was definitely a direction that came from the leadership and the ownership of the company, just, you know, really willing to try something new. As a lean organization, even before we did lean, we were making improvements and, you know, a lot of, we tried many, many things over the years. and being scientific in our thinking and, you know, trying to be educated about how we go about making adjustments. You know, I think that much of the thinking behind a shift like this, which occurred after I was here for a year rather than right there in the beginning, was primarily, you know, here we have lean thinking and as the improvement engine of the organization that's really responsible to oversee that this is truly cultural, that folks are thinking and acting on a regular basis in ways that focus on the customer, both internal and external, with respect for people. And for corporate training to move from HR to lean kind of makes sense, although it might be a deviation from industry standard because, you know, HR is developing people, it's human resources, it's developing those folks. And so to move it under lean makes sense from a couple perspectives. One of them is if we develop people, then people will be developing and improving processes that ultimately flow value to the customer. And so, I could describe this about myself only because others have told me this over the years. You're a people guy and you're a process guy. So I'm all about people and process. So I think that might've been a second reason why the shift is I'm naturally a teacher. I'm a coach, a mentor. Just love seeing the light bulb turn on for people. I love the idea of improvement starting with myself. And then if, you know, and that's why lean is so attractive to me, is because it is respectful for all people. And it's a win-win. You know, Covey talks about 7 habits of highly effective people. One of those habits is to think win-win. Lean is a win-win business model, if not a triple win or a quadruple win, because here you have employees who win, they're asked what they think. And oftentimes folks are surprised that we care what they think. I mean, on all levels. And so that's a boost to morale and also engagement, and quality goes up and all the things. It's a win for employers because as costs come down, then there can be a greater profitability. And what's unique about that at Best Bath is we have a profit sharing model. Love to share more about that if you're interested. Third, it's a win for our customers. We're really focusing on our customers. Lean is that customer centric model. It's the only business model that I know of that does that. And it's this trifecta of win, 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 but also include the suppliers. When it comes to certain net profit goals or driving financial performance, many companies will probably go to their suppliers and start asking for price reductions. As a lean organization and being respectful for people and understanding the long-term relationships, we've been doing this for half a century, we should look at our own processes and try and understand, you know, on our own turf, where are the wastes? What can we do better? And so we look at us first rather than going to our suppliers to ask for them to solve those problems or help us achieve those goals. And during the pandemic, it was so fascinating to see what happened when many were shorted on raw materials. We were not. We were prioritized because we have those long-term relationships. In fact, we grew. We've had just-in-time improvements over the years that get us to a 3 to 5 day turn when the competition is 2 to 3 weeks. Well, when theirs doubled or tripled, ours stayed the same. And when people came to us, when timing was of the essence and construction timelines and deadlines, they needed bathing solutions in place. We responded to that. The hope was that that growth during the pandemic didn't drop because, you know, previous suppliers of theirs were now being resupplied with raw materials. In fact, we've maintained that customer base because they've gotten a taste of the Best Bath way and the customer advantage of who we are and how we focus on them to flow value to them, to partner with them on solutions. And so at a very high level, you know, that's really what we're doing, is developing people to that end.
I would love to highlight something Jared mentioned where, you know, when we ask people what people think, I authentically want everybody in the organization to be able to critically think and problem solve using the same language and in the same way and in the same fashion, no matter what it is we're trying to solve. I feel like it's harmonious for the organization to be able to communicate with this on the same level.
I love what you guys are saying here. You're talking about really understanding customer problems and developing capability inside the organization to address those problems. And like you were saying, Jared, it's a win for the business, win for employees, win for the customer. And it sounds like it's paid off with the competitive advantage. It sounds like you've achieved through lead time reduction and also the responsiveness you kept up during the very challenging times over the course of the pandemic. This doesn't accidentally happen, though. To achieve what you just said there, Jay, critical thinking across the organization, there needs to be some method. And I'm curious to understand how you guys go about actually developing those problem-solving capabilities, providing those skills across the organization. Maybe Jared, can you share, you know, how do you practically go about doing that? What's your method?
What a great question. Thanks for asking. That's something that we're very passionate about. I guess the first example is lean education. You know, we have a series of lean courses. The first one is required for all employees that we offer on their first, between 45 and 60 days of employment. And just give them the basics. You know, what is lean? Defining value, understanding waste. You know, we're really training eyeballs to see what lean is talking about with waste. And then the idea of customer, both internal and external, and kind of opening the mind that way. And it, just introducing a few of those key topics in that fundamentals course, which culminates in flow, the holy grail of lean. And then thereafter are additional courses that we offer, like lean problem solving. We've titled it that way as folks come in. You know, we're really interested in, like we said earlier, developing critical thinking for folks. And as a lean company, you know, anybody can do lean if you're just going to, let me put it this way. You can copy all sorts of lean stuff, but unless you're thinking scientifically, you're not doing lean. And so we've really been focusing on just the seedbed of lean thinking, which is PDCA, plan, do, check, act. In sixth grade science class, I learned it as the scientific method. And, you know, in a company culture, language is a really important part of the culture. And so we want everybody using the same terms when asked, where are you at in your improvement project? Say, I'm in the middle somewhere. That doesn't really do me any favors, nor does it help the improvement team. But if they say, oh, we're in the check phase. Oh, okay, I got it. What are you learning? You know, share your learning with me. And what was the last step you took? What did you learn from that? And how does that influence the next step that you're going to take? So we teach this in the class. We employ Toyota Kata and the four-step improvement method there of understanding the challenge, which ties in beautifully with Hoshin Kanri. What is our current condition? And then how do you break that large challenge down into smaller goals? Well, we set that as our next target condition, and we experiment from current to target. And that gap, you know, our lean theme for 2023 will probably be our lean theme forever, is solve the gap. And so we're really getting clear on how to state a problem. What are we getting compared to what we really want to be getting? And then we experiment using PDCA from here to there. Now, people can come in and out of a class, and that's one thing. We go a little further than that, and we ask folks to come back 24 hours later and take a quiz. But we've given them all the questions and all the answers during the course. They know from the beginning that this is going to happen. They have a workbook. It's clear on where the questions are and what the answers are. When they come in the next day, it's open book and open neighbor. We want them to understand that the method of instruction that we're employing in this case is repetition. Repetition is the mother of all learning. And we make it fun. There's activities that make it memorable, but here they have another chance to reflect on those experiences and take this quiz. And then there's one more quiz to wrap it up 24 hours later, and that is from memory. You have to have 80% to pass. We have hundreds of folks who have gone through these courses, and everybody's passing. So that's level two. You know, there's lean education, but then we do more than just classwork. We do the quizzes. And then there's one last thing I'd like to round this answer out with, and that is, as a lean company, we have a lot of lean things. We have lean boards and lean huddles and Gemba walks, which we call lean walks. et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There are many different pieces to this system. But what I love about the way that we're structured is that in any department, you can come in and out of these lean classes, and let's take problems, lean problem solving specifically. When you leave the class, you have something to act on. Mm. You have a lean board that is it's mapped out in such a way that folks are able to interact with it. We're leveraging visual management, lots of engagement, a very spirited organization. Retention is at record high levels, and it's just really awesome to see engagement with teams coming together and individuals having inventive ideas, because we're encouraging it through this lean education and the way that we really focus on what LEI would call learn by doing.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. Are you struggling to implement change inside your organization? Then join us at the 2024 Lean Summit in Carlsbad, California on March 19th and 20th, with optional workshops on the 21st and 22nd. Dive deep into the transformative power of Lean and immerse yourself in inspiring keynotes and practical learning sessions. This year's theme is Shaping Tomorrow, Developing People, and offers game-changing insights and actionable strategies for today's toughest business challenges. And here's a special tip for our listeners. Register by October 31st and save up to $900 on your registration. Don't miss out on this opportunity to expand your expertise and connect with like-minded leaders. Learn more at lean.org/summit. Now, back to the podcast.
And I do want to drill into the specifics of how that comes to life. But before doing that, that word culture, it's dependent on how everybody acts and behaves, not just frontline workers, but leaders. And really, frontline workers are a reflection of leadership. And so I'm curious to hear from Jay, as the co-CEO of the organization, what are you thinking about as a leader to try to instill the behaviors that Jared just talked about in the employees and the whole workforce?
Well, I think, it all starts with the expectation and the expectations that are set, and the expectations that we all hold each other accountable to. When I think of culture, I like the phrase, I get what I tolerate, and then I get what I deserve. So, we're pretty tenacious around here about getting involved, being our best, holding each other up, holding each other accountable. The one thing I've recognized about all my problems is that I'm the common denominator. So before I start going around thinking, externally, even on a enterprise scale, whether it's my suppliers are causing me these problems, these installers are causing me these problems. Well, I first get to look inward. And Jared mentioned, the lean boards, and that's something that I think I'm most proud of over, the last 25 years at Best Bath. As we have a system of Gemba walks, which we call our lean walks. And we expect everybody to present at these lean walks through, as we rotate through. We do them every week. We cycle through the entire organization every month. And, yes, sometimes it's the manager of the department or the lead or a supervisor up there presenting, but especially if somebody else poses a problem or a challenge, or they do an A3, or they talk about, hey, here's what we're struggling with, as they're in front of the president, the directors, ownership. We're there to help, and in fact, I encourage them to come up with their challenges. It's the most disappointing thing for me is to go through a lean walk and have a department say, all's good here. Here's how great we're doing, because then I don't really know how to support them. I mean, I usually know that they're doing well. I don't need to go to that department to say, hey, good job. Although I'd love to, I'm there in a loving way to talk about how can we all improve. And then it trickles. Somebody once said to me, what's good for dad is good for the family. And I just couldn't think that it could be more backwards. Really, it's what's good for the family is what's good for dad, if you ask me. And the way I translate that to the organization is what's good for the employees is good for the company.
Kind of goes back to that old lean saying, probably from Taichi Ono, no problem is a big problem. And I love what you said there. You get what you tolerate. So it's a mix. You have high expectations for people, but in having high expectations of other people, you have high expectations for yourself. And let's go ahead and dig into some of the practical stuff that you guys actually do to enable all of this. And some of this you're going to be talking about at our summit coming up in March. And Jared, you mentioned some of the methods that you use, Kata, A3. You're also going to be talking about something you call A6. I really like it when companies come up with their own thing because it means that they didn't just copy and paste. There was some thought into it and they own it. And so there's a sense of pride and a sense of, I don't know, it's your own. You're not just copying the TPS house. So can you talk through, I guess, yeah, let's dig into what is the A6? And is there an example you can walk us through of how this problem solving solved a particularly challenging business problem for you all?
Yeah, you bet. So the A6, this is a play on alphanumerics. You know, the A3 is an international paper size for 11 by 17 for those of us here in the States. And of course, Toyota uses that on one side of one piece of paper, or at least did at one time. And I understand with pencil because it's a living document and should easily be changed as you learn. We've been employing A3 for years and years, and we've had some great gains from that tool. We still use that tool today. As I mentioned earlier, this notion of truly continuous improvement is, you know, for us, we're just looking for creative ways to make sure that improvement was truly continuous, not discontinuous and event-based. Not that it's bad, and Kaizen events have their place, and we've done plenty of them, and we have improvement blitzes that happen. You know, Paul Akers has this idea of 2-second lean. And years ago, that really influenced me in terms of just those quick wins, the just do it's the really it's how people are engaged on the daily basis. And it's, you know, it's very natural. It's organic. You're teaching people lean. You're asking them to engage and be involved. Sometimes an A3 is going to take months, you know, if not weeks, to really dive in and understand those challenges. And you might have somebody away from others going and seeing and learning. And so there's improvements happening. And for years and years, there have been a whole host of those things happening at Best Bath, and I'm sure in many other companies. There came a time when each department being involved in their own improvement efforts and utilizing A3, sometimes their projects weren't quite as big as what you'd think an A3 would handle. You know, if A3 is thought of as a critical thinking tool to solve complex problems, what about the problems that aren't so complex? Or what about some wiggle in a process that you just need to take 10 minutes to improve and do it today? Well, there was this desire to document each improvement at Best Bath. There was the thought that A3 was the way to do that, but in order to but as far as a connection there, it wasn't quite the connect to have something that was usually for solving tougher problems when it was just a quick win or a just do it. Well, in talking with Jay one day, we kind of created a solution that I think helped to meet the request. As I had understood, managers and others in the organization wanted to provide an A3 for each improvement, and that could be taxing. Well, in talking with Jay didn't necessarily want an A3 for every improvement. The goal there was simply to just document each improvement. Oh, okay. So now here came the opportunity to pull in the A6, which is really, it's smaller. It's international paper size for 4x6 here in the States, postcard sized. It's got many of the same elements of an A3, like you know, PDCA is on there. But it basically gives it, there's less to fill out, less of a deep dive to truly understand the background of an issue and root cause analysis. It's more like if you're 100% sure that the next step you're going to take is going to solve the issue, it's an A6. And we have space for these up on the board. And we use a poll system from left to right. There's three sections. There's opportunities that we max out at 6. There are three improvements that we allow to be in process at once. And then over to the far right is the completed section with no max. We have infinite capacity for completed improvements, and they live there. They are in a transparent sleeve where you can flip through and see and honor the people who had these creative ideas, but also, hey, are we sustaining? So they live there, and it pulls from left to right, and we limit the number of improvements that are going on at one time. Why? Because we have a lot of different types of work to do. There's production type work in any department. Every department's doing production of some sort. And then there's improvement time. And knowing that that's limited, we wanted to make sure that we were completing improvements. So we have a max of 3 right there. And it solved that issue. Maybe Jay could speak to it better, but in terms of really understanding or documenting the improvements that were happening, these small wins were adding up, and it's actually quite staggering to see the effect that they've had for us. We've known that the effect is there, but to numerically quantify those improvements, it's been fun to include those in as in with A6 being an ingredient to the to a true learning organization or a lean culture.
As we expect continuous improvement and engagement around continuous improvement, the A6 has been a wonderful way for us to rally around those quick wins. I mean, you're right, those push broom rebristling ideas, you know, we were getting A3s for sharpening of saw blades, and it was, you know, we were shooting ourselves in the foot with our own mandated bureaucracy. So, and to tell the story a little bit differently, as we were getting those burdened A3 forms, we started doing some investigating, and Jared found out, well, yeah, Jay expects an A3 for every improvement. Well, doggone it, you know, I guess I really screwed up there. But the spirit was that I want to encourage improvements of all types and critical thinking around all problems. And so this was just a wonderful way for us to memorialize, honor, remember, because I've been around long enough at Best Bath too to, you know, I'd get a wonderful A3 for a problem that we solved 10 years ago. And it's like, gosh, we've got some work to do around training, memorializing, honoring these problems so that we can sustain these solutions that we're making. And the A3 is, an A6 especially, is just a wonderful way for us to really get some good momentum and make sure that those quick wins stick.
How are you guys, do you guys measure this? Do you have a way to actually quantify, or what's your method of tracking how successful you are?
Yeah, you bet. I'll take that one. So in addition to our A3s, we really combine the A6s together, which the A6s by way of volume are much greater. We started doing this in the middle of 2022. So just give you an example of Q3 and Q4, the 6-month period, we counted 93 improvements. And we're trying to quantify, you know, we're good at identifying and getting rid of the waste, but we wanted to know how much. So on this A6, there's on the reverse side, a quick calculation tool to just look at the time perspective. Did you save time? Did you save cost, like actual cost? Was there a motion reduction in steps? And really that all equates to money. And so we boiled it down to a tracker that each department manager is responsible to contribute to, this one database. It's really easy to use. And at the end of those first 6 months in rolling out the A6 and the desire to quantify improvement, we had 93 total improvements. of those, we broke it down into some reduction of cost, which was may not sound like a lot, but it was almost $120,000. Then, and this is just mostly for May 6s, like I said, and the sum of time saved in hours was 6,190. And we annualize these improvements. If we have a 4-second improvement here, but you know, it's happening throughout the year, we multiplied that out. Or in steps, 735,000 steps, which is basically 368 miles that we were paying people to walk and add zero value. And then if you convert those hours and those miles to time, then we add the 120,000 in savings to those other savings, and it was pushing $600,000 just with that first 6 months of engaging an entire workforce, not in in a fundamentally different way because we'd been doing this for years, but here we have quantified improvement. And that's internal marketing for us that continues to build within the organization. And most, if not all, those improvements are going to spill into the next year. So this year we're not walking, we're not spending 6,190 hours of cycle time that we were before. And there's the new improvements on top of that. And then one last note, if I could mention, is we also just tally on the A6. Hey, is this relate to quality, cost, delivery, safety, morale? Sometimes it's tougher to quantify how much safer are we now? How much better is morale? Well, of those 93 ideas, 17 had to do with safety. So we at least tally it. 40 had to do with 5S. 76 of those 93 ideas were a boost to morale. You know, and sometimes an A6 is just to boost morale. We'll go for it. Let's do it. And then the count of improvements that improved quality to some degree was 49. And then on delivery, which is really better flow, 50. So that's one way that we've extended the use of our A6. And we share these numbers openly. In fact, we're pretty open with our financials. And so this is just an extension of that.
Yeah. And that may sound complex what you're describing there, but I've seen the A6. The calculations are really simple. You guys haven't made it a burdensome process, a barrier for people putting this stuff in. So many companies have these incredible bureaucracies dedicated to tallying and calculating ROI on improvement. You guys have made it very simple and highly motivating. And we'll get to the profit sharing stuff in a second, but I do want to bring a real life example to life here. You guys mentioned there was one particular challenge you were facing with your construction partners. So you guys build the bath, deliver it, and then it gets installed inside of a building. Can you guys walk through what exactly that problem was and how was it solved?
Well, I'll speak in generalities first. Especially as we started becoming a more lean organization, we started encountering some unique challenges, especially around the expectations of the construction industry. As an example, you know, we have the shortest lead times, of any bathing supplier I'm aware of. And we don't make it until they order it. And our construction partners were, I guess, skeptical of what, especially new partners, were skeptical of what we could do. You know, so like happens commonly in the construction industry, you know, they put in pads, they put in buffers. And we were, you know, we would make a commitment, say, we'll ship you a truckload in 2 weeks. And we'd say, you know, just give us your delivery date. We'll make sure it's there. Well, they'd give us a delivery date, you know, that was padded considerably. And so when we picked up the phone, we weren't smart enough to pick up the phone and say, hey, are you getting, the truck's loaded and we're getting ready to ship. But, you know, the truck would get there. And it would turn around, or they couldn't receive shipment. We'd have all kinds of bickering going back and forth. You know, then we started getting smarter, and we started calling our construction partners ahead of time, saying, "Okay, we're starting building on your load. It's going to ship in 2 weeks, or the load is ready, and it's going to ship today. Can you receive it? You'll receive it, you know, in a week or whenever it would be." even if they weren't ready at that time, we still had more challenges to go through. And so how did we try and remedy that? Well, we tried to remedy with a big stick. We'd say, okay, well, we'll charge you a storage fee. That kind of worked, but it also didn't build that win-win and the rapport that we were really after. Yes, it was a pain in their side, and they didn't want to pay it, even though they committed to it. So we were trying to hold them accountable. Still wasn't the ideal solution, right? So what I would say the golden nugget is our sales staff and our salespeople realize that they're the tip of the spear. They're the tip of the lean spear. And they get out on the job sites, they get the wind in their nose. You know, they're talking, they're helping with installing, they're working with the supervisors or the superintendents. They're working with the purchasing agents. We really, because we've walked their Gemba, we're a little bit more knowledgeable. We're seen as a resource. We're able to really help aid in some of those challenges that may just get remedied in some other way by using lay down yards, which can be expensive or and sometimes not even available, or wholesale warehouses, which can provide some value as well. But, you know, we see that we're primed to be able to take advantage of and provide that value as well. And it's, you know, Lean talks as much about product flow as it does about information flow. And I think that is the major piece that we've been able to realize in our Lean development, especially as a construction supplier. You know, there are some other examples I could share. You know, Matt, we're an expensive shower. And so, you know, we need to realize and not that we need to make our customers realize the value, but that we offer, because it's not really about that. Sometimes they don't value some of the solutions that we have to offer, and that's okay. But we have a variety, a small variety, not too large, of where we can capitalize. And another one of them is in installation. We've worked diligently in our in-house engineering, working with design architects and other building designers and also at the job site with their team, really understanding, well, what are we doing with our packaging that's getting in the way? What are we doing with, what can we do at the factory that can really help make things go smoother on the job site? Things like we can make damn sure that the shower's level before it leaves the factory. We have all those tools and capabilities, but is that a benefit on the job site? And can we realize it at the job site? Well, it turns out, yes. I mean, and guess what? The building owner wants their floors to be flat and level too. There are all kinds from standard lean stuff, you know, like assembly. You know, I've walked job sites, one in Carlsbad, actually, where it was a three-story senior living center. Of course, there's no power to the building, so the elevators aren't working. There's no air conditioning. And I'm stuck walking the whole facility installing grab bars into the showers. Well, what a waste on a job site when I can do it at the factory and we can just plug it right in and move on to the next one. And those are some old, easy, simple wins, but it's that spirit that we really focus on. You know, the flow of information is so critical, and our sales staff recognizes that.
You guys are really focused on what can we do to influence the situation? A lot of companies are eager to blame folks like, construction partners or their suppliers. But, if you relentlessly ask, what can we do to address the situation? It's surprising how many problems you can solve that ostensibly aren't in your control. You know, you guys have mentioned this a couple of times, and I'm guessing this is part of the cultural transformation, or at least has an impact on it. But this profit sharing model that you guys have, how does it work, and what influence would you say it has on the organization?
I'd love to talk about that. And first, Matt, as you were talking about the mind shift, you know, once we turned the corner in the way we thought and with our culture about how do we make things, how do we spend more time making sure things go right than correcting problems that go wrong? That was a big moment for us. And that's just another way I would describe how you recapped that. Our profit share model is, I think, fairly unique. I won't take credit for it. It is something that my father put in place, and it was actually something that really allowed me to get a great sense of pride in the organization. I still remember the factory meeting where we pulled everybody together, and he said, you know, when I'm profitable, I'll share it all with you. And that was a big moment for me. I recognize that it is so much easier for an organization to be profitable if every single person in the organization is focused on it, rather than what typically happens is you have 1, 2, 3, maybe a few people at the top who are really focused on profitability, and everybody else just focused on doing their job. So our model, I think, is unique in the fact that it starts from the bottom up. We have a certain number that we need to hit in order to continue to grow and continue to make capital improvements, pay taxes, these types of things, make expansions. And after that number, we have a few different buckets to fill. And the first bucket that gets filled is, once we go over that nut that we need to cover, is the entry-level employee. And we have the most, due to the nature of us being a manufacturing organization, we have quite a few of those entry-level employees. And I have no problem sharing numbers because, again, like, I think if a company is interested in putting together a profit share program, you have to be completely transparent. And if you're not transparent, you can't expect anybody to trust you. So, you know, we share our P&L every month with the employees. I have no concern about it because I have a fundamental belief that people are smart. And, you know, they understand general finances. And I do get some odd questions sometimes where people will say, you know, so, hey, Jay, you know, what are the Multanans going to do with that $600,000 profit you guys got? And after profit share? And the answer is pay taxes first and invest back in the company, because we're all here because of this company, and we're all going to grow because of this company. And that's just our fundamental message. So that entry-level employees, they all get $850 before the next tier gets filled. And then they all get their number, which is slightly more, before that next tier gets filled, which is the leads. And then they all get their number before the next tier gets their opportunity to get the number. And that's the supervisors. And then it's the managers. And then finally, it's the directors. I'll put Jared on the spot because we just got rid of our president. Our president asked us to take her off profit share because she didn't want it to be perceived as a conflict of interest, which is, by the way, some of the interesting conversations that you have when you're all completely transparent and honest and open with each other. And you have this sense of trust. Jared, do you mind sharing with the directors, what the director's profit share level is?
You bet. Happy to share and also really appreciate the generosity. This pays out monthly when we are profitable and have profit share, and it's $2,700. And just to add to that, in the last 10 years, to my understanding, this pays out 10 out of 12 months on average. Last year was 11 months, and this year it's been every month.
But it's like a inverted pyramid. So the directors won't get paid until everybody below them has gotten paid.
Isn't that awesome?
Right.
To drive the outward mindset and a true servant leadership of humble inquiry and really looking outward to others.
Wow. I love having those conversations. There was a time, Matt, when I had a conversation with a supervisor who was feeling disgruntled because he hadn't, in this particular year, that tier hadn't been fully reached as much as the tiers below him had. And he was really upset that they were taking home more money than him and we had a great conversation about it. You know, what kind of decisions are you making as a supervisor, or what kind of decisions are we making as an organization that's preventing us from reaching these tiers? How can we continue to empower these departments so that we can reach these numbers? It's just been the catalyst to have some really fascinating discussions, and it brings to light a lot of good information.
Well, this has been a wonderful conversation. Jared and Jay, thank you so much for joining me here. You've given me a lot to think about, and I hope a lot for our listeners to think about. And hopefully, you know, some folks will join you guys in Carlsbad next March and learn directly from you guys. But thank you again for joining me here on the podcast.
Thank you, Matt. It's been a pleasure, Matt, to be here.
Appreciate it. Take care.
I'd like to thank Jay and Jared for joining me here on the podcast. You'll have a chance to learn directly from them and 25 plus other business leaders from companies like DHL, Honda, and Boeing at the Lean Summit in March 2024. Learn more at lean.org/summit. And as always, thank you, the listener, for tuning in.